from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny.
The Republicans have failed to enact a single jobs bill. And the American people do not have the luxury of waiting any longer for Congress to act to create jobs.
That's San Francisco Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, former Speaker of the House of Representatives, now Minority Party Leader. She'll join us in the first half hour of the upcoming hour. At 10:30, we discuss the future of American journalism with Salon.com founder David Talbot, who is taking over as CEO of the magazine he founded. Forum is next. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to the second hour of this morning's forum program. San Francisco Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi joins us in studio for this forum segment. She served, of course, as Speaker of the House of Representatives until the Republican majority ascended. Now she serves as House Democratic Leader, and we welcome her back to forum. Glad to have you here. Welcome.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning.
Good morning. Well, you're here in town, as I understand it, visiting Anchor Brewing, which is right near us here in San Francisco, later this morning, spotlighting local manufacturing. Prompts me to ask you, administration has had, I think what can be characterized appropriately as a major embarrassment with the demise of Solyndra, and how does that hurt the president's attempt to promote his jobs program?
Oh, I think they're two separate issues. I think the president's jobs program is something that's being very well received around the country. It's about the ABCs, A, American made, in our case, made in San Francisco, supporting the strengthening of our manufacturing and industrial base, make us self-reliant. Secondly, build America, building infrastructure, and C, community recovery, to do this in a community-based way. You have to have a strong public sector to do that, and you have to have a strong, strong private sector. And that's why today I'm be visiting Anchor Steam, but also there will be a number of other small businesses. Later in today, I'll meet with a dozen or so small businesses as well, because we see that the path to economic recovery. Small businesses where jobs are created, where capital is formed, where people can reach their aspirations. So there are those who do not support renewable energy and the rest of that, who want to use Solyndra as an embarrassment. There are many loan guarantees. That loan guarantee, in fact, was begun in the Bush administration. But some of them succeed, some do not. It's the entrepreneurial spirit. It's a big disappointment. It's a lot of money. But it's not something that we should say, well, that didn't work, so let's hold back on everything else.
Now, speaking about what doesn't work or what does work, here we have a cut that I'd like to get your response to. Here is John Boehner, Speaker Boehner, recent criticism of the administration's handling overall of the economy and the debt crisis.
Here was a president asking for the largest debt increase in American history on the heels of the largest spending binge in American history. And here's what we got for that massive spending binge: a new health care bill that most Americans never asked for, a stimulus bill that was more effective in producing material for late-night comedians than it was in producing jobs, and a national debt that has gotten so out of hand it sparked a crisis without precedent in my lifetime or yours.
Now, certainly underlying Speaker Boehner's remarks is not only criticism of the Democratic Party, but a sense of saying we have to be maybe as austere as the Greeks now, and we have to cut back social programs. I mean, that's at least how I deconstruct it. And your response?
Well, I think that what you heard from Speaker Boehner was a blatantly political statement that is not associated with the facts and ignores the whole premise of the basis for how we got into this situation in the first place. The fact is that the recovery package created or saved over 3 million jobs. Don't take our word for it. That's the objective fact. The fact is the tax cuts that the Bush administration instituted were largely responsible for the deficit that we're in. Two unpaid-for wars, tax cuts at the high end, and and a giveaway to the pharmaceutical industry. Don't take my word for it. That's what the Congressional Budget Office says has accounted for the large part of the deficit that got us into deep recession, a financial crisis that is a meltdown, and all of that contributing again to a deep recession.
We have a bigger debt now, though, than we did before.
Well, because we have lower revenues, because we have a continuation of the recession. But let me say this. Did you know that more jobs were created in the private sector in the second year of the Obama administration last year than in the 8 years of the Bush administration? That's with the tax cuts at the high end that they told us were going to create jobs. They did not. And what Mr. Boehner is suggesting is more of the same. And we say no. The fact is that the health care bill will create 4 million jobs. It will liberate people to be not job locked because a child is bipolar or has diabetes, or they fear that somebody in their family or themselves can be ill. So people can reach their aspirations. They can be self-employed. They can be creative, a writer, an artist. They can start a business. They could change jobs. That has a great deal of vitality to our economy. What was the third thing he said? Oh, a spending binge. The biggest spending binge that our country's been on is tax cuts at the high end. Do you know that we spend more on tax breaks than we do on what we invest in terms of initiatives to educate the public, to have transportation and a court system and the rest of that?
It's refreshing to many people to hear President Obama now speaking about, well, with Warren Buffett kind of buffeting him about the necessity for tax cuts for the very wealthy. And I'm wondering, in fact, there was an article recently in Newsweek about you which suggested that you were perhaps pushing the president to be tougher and more aggressive, as so many feel that he needs to be, and that he is maybe coming into his own on that score now? How do you feel?
Well, I accept the compliment, but the fact is the president's timing is the president's own timing, and we're very pleased that he is getting out in the public. President Lincoln said, public sentiment is everything. You can be doing all the right things, but if the public isn't aware of it, then that's a problem. And so I think it's we're very pleased that the president is going forth with his job initiative, which is very important, of course, and also with his deficit reduction plan. And the very idea that the speaker would be crying crocodile tears over the deficit when this is a deficit that was created in the Bush years. But you know what? We want results. Why the back and forth? We know how we got here. The American people know how we got here. It's a very deep economic situation that we're in. It's not cyclical. It's structural. It's systemic. And we have to deal with it. But we don't deal with it by cutting the investments in education and the human resources that we need to grow our economy. We don't reduce the deficit by not creating jobs. And all most responsible economists will tell you that, and all of the bipartisan commissions, whether it's Simpson-Bowles, Domenici-Rivlin, the Gang of Six, all of them have said you have to have long-term deficit reduction, but if you cut too soon and too much, you will deter economic growth.
How are the Democrats approaching the deficit super committee negotiations? Because there are a number of progressives who are concerned and have expressed their concern that Democrats will agree to deal with zero or a few new revenues.
Well, I don't know who you're talking about there, but what I do know is that the people that have accepted my invitation to serve on that committee, Congressman Chris Van Hollen, Congressman Jim Clyburn, Congressman Javier Becerra, know their stuff. They're tough negotiators. They care about the American people. They act upon that care in terms of good public policy. Our caucus, our House Democratic Caucus, has sent them to that table with a task to create jobs. The best way to reduce the deficit is to create jobs, reduce revenue coming back into the Treasury. Create jobs. And how do we use the tax code, and how do we use our investments or cuts and the timing of them to do just that, create jobs?
Are you concerned about the so-called Blue Dog Democrats on the jobs bill?
No.
No? You feel that it's really going to fly, and you're going to get unanimity in terms of support.
We strive for consensus. If there's one person who's off the reservation, either on the right or the left, I don't want to answer for that. But what I will say is that our caucus has been united. We supported the president with his big plan, which would reduce the deficit by more than is really called for. We want the president's initiative to be big. If it's big and it has revenue and it has growth, it can have cuts, not cuts in benefits, but cuts in cost, and that is healthy.
Excuse me, including what some of the Blue Dogs have shouted about, extending payroll tax cuts?
Extending payroll tax cuts is as part of the president's jobs plan, yes.
There's some real disagreement, though, among the Blue Dogs on that.
The fact is that everybody could take apart any plan you have, but we're the approach our caucus is taking is, what is the result? What are we going to get at the end of the day? Are we going to create jobs? Are we going to reduce the deficit? Are we going to do it in a fiscally sound way that does not deter economic growth? Does it mean that every piece of the whole package is something that everybody supports 100%? No, that would almost be impossible. But it does mean and I hear this outside the Congress, where people who may disagree with one piece or another says, but if it gets us to where we need to go in terms of job creation and deficit reduction, then we're all willing to, if it's fair, we're all willing to share the participation in, I don't want to say sacrifice, because people at the low end of the scale have been bearing the sacrifice for too long, but we have to have a cooperation. So it's no use saying, well, these three people don't agree with this one provision or those four don't. Everybody is in agreement that we have to get the job done and we have to get results. And I just want to say one more thing about the speaker. He was willing to take our country to the brink. This was shameful behavior on part of the Republicans. No other president have we said, unless you do it our way, we're going to let the country default.
You have more problems from the speaker or from the Tea Party, really? I mean,
well, whatever it is,
kind of
they didn't have
the
votes. Well, he bent to the Tea Party. He didn't have the votes. Said he got 98% of what he wanted in the bill. Didn't have the votes. I had to impose on my members to vote for something that was all cuts, no revenue, not fair, but nonetheless, we could not let the country default, which is where they were willing to take the country. But again, the American people want results, and that's where we have to go with this. Republicans have said no revenue. They will not increase any taxes for the high end. Some on the left say to me, you have to draw your line in the sand. Well, they draw theirs, we draw ours. It's no use going to the table. We're saying we have to have revenue. And we're willing to make concessions as well, but we've got to get the job done.
Our guest is Congresswoman Nancy Pelosi, now the Democratic leader in the House of Representatives. And let me open the phone lines and invite those of you. We already have a lot of web comments and questions coming in through email and so forth. You can contribute. She's only going to be with us for a half hour, but please feel free to call. Our toll-free number, whether you're listening on radio, internet, or Sirius satellite, is 866-733-6786. Again, 866-733-6786. You can also send an email to us, forum@kqed.org, or send your question and comment via the web. And you can simply go to our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on the segment, or go to our Facebook page. Just a quick question, Leader Pelosi, and that is the stopgap spending bill, which actually passed today, keeps the government open, mm-hmm. I guess, until Tuesday. But what happens then?
Well, on Tuesday, it should be an easier time to go forward. The problem with the legislation up until now had been, again, for the first time, the Republicans are saying for disaster assistance, we must find a pay for. And the pay for they went to was one that was a job creator. That was this advanced technology for vehicle manufacturing. It's created jobs. It's helping to keep America number one. And they wanted to slash that because it's, you know, on renewables, alternative, whether it's battery initiatives, alternatives to the current emission system, shall we say, of cars. The fact is you shouldn't have to – we've never said to a president – I go back to where I was – Unless you do it our way, we're going to default on the full faith and credit of the United States of America. Unless you do it our way, we're not going to have disaster assistance. That's never happened before. Well, we've gotten over that for the next few days, and next week we'll be able to pass a bill that keeps the government open until November 18th. But it is, the public has reason to be concerned, but the fact is the president has to explain to the public clearly what the choices are, why we're in the situation we're in, and why, and maybe it's better if people understood it this way. If you wanted to reduce the deficit, you go to the table, you make cuts, you get revenue, you create jobs, growth, 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 to get the job done. We know how to do that. We had to do it after President Bush won, the big Reagan-Bush deficit that was the country inherited then. President Clinton, we did the 1993 Budget Act. Many members lost their seats at that time because it did raise taxes, but it took us on a path to economic recovery. 26 million jobs were created, largely in the public, private sector, but with the right policies coming from D.C. It had President Clinton's budgets were, the last four of them were in balance or in surplus. We were on a path to surplus. Well, all turned around when President Bush was elected, tax cuts to the high end, again, initiating two unpaid wars, bonanza for the pharmaceutical industry. So now we inherit that again. We know how to do that. If you want to reduce the deficit, we know how to do it. Let's work together in a bipartisan way. But if you want to use the deficit as an excuse to hijack the well-founded concerns of the American people that we all share, that we cannot have a continuing growth in the deficit, we must reduce the deficit. If you want to use that as an excuse to destroy the public space, clean air, clean water, food safety, public education, public safety, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, that's what you see here. And that's why it's hard to come to find common ground, because one wants to destroy the public space. The other is saying, we have shared values with the American people. I think Republicans and Democrats and independents agree. We must educate our children. We must have a dignified retirement for our seniors. We must create jobs. That's a moral obligation almost for our economy. We must have a clean environment and safe public safety for our families to thrive. We have to protect our country and do so in a fiscally sound way. No, nothing political about those. They are shared values of the American people.
But it's become political.
But it requires a strong public.
Political.
It has. You have to have a strong public sector and a very strong private sector to do that.
We'll bring our callers on here. Actually, I'm looking at some of the web comments. This one, for example, consider a way of communicating different from everything the Republicans say is wrong or a lie, and everything the Democrats say is correct and the truth. I rarely hear a way of communicating that hears or acknowledges that the other person or party says. My point is, the words I hear from both parties is so off-putting, at least to my ears. And there's kind of somebody from the public saying it's just too polarized, and I can't.
Well, they would have. I understand why they would have that impression, but this isn't about bickering about politics. This is about a serious, deep debate about public policy, about the role of government. Nobody wants any government more than we need, but the public sector has a strong role. And this is not unfamiliar. We've been there before, except now with the Tea Party wagging the dog of the Republican Party. It's very hard for them to find compromise. I appreciate what the caller is saying, but that doesn't mean we put down the gauntlet. We walk away from the fight, because nothing less is at stake than a quality education for all of America's children, a dignified retirement for our seniors. I'll repeat it: standard of new green jobs for the future, to create jobs and to strengthen our manufacturing base. Again, public safety.
You just put down your pen, and I thought to myself, how much regret do you have in having to put down your gavel?
Well, the only thing we've got to have about that is what it means to the American people to have
I mean, when you were talking about Boehner, it was clear that, you know, there are mixed feelings, to put it mildly, about being able to even work with him.
Oh, no. I have a good personal rapport with him. That's not the case. But for him to characterize the president's actions, it has no connection to fact. And I have to counter that. But the fact is that the more the public knows what the choice is, the stronger the president's voice is out there. As you remember in 06, when we were making the fight to win the House, we were the voice because there was no Democratic president. Now, thank God, we have a Democratic president. Now, thank God, he's out there saying what is at stake in the election. He has always, and we all have a responsibility, reached out to the Republicans to try to find common ground. If their stated purpose, though, is his destruction of his presidency, not his defeat in the election, that's fair game, but the destruction of his presidency, that has to be recognized.
Forgive me, Leader Pelosi. We want to get some callers on here, and we've got Jerry up. Jerry, join us. You're on.
Thanks, Michael, for taking my call. Yeah. Ms. Pelosi, I love your work, and I really appreciate what you do in Congress. I just wanted to know if you had some comments on Thomas Friedman's articles of late about the need for a third party, considering the fact, you're kind of preaching to the choir on NPR. We hear the same talking points. I agree with everything you say. I'm a physician in Northern California. I don't think we went far enough on the health care bill. But what he's saying is we are gridlocked because special interests and money that has raised to the top basically have the throat of the Tea Party and the Republican Party. They're not going to let this stuff get done.
I think we get your point, Jerry, and I thank you for that. I'm looking at a web comment here from a listener. It says, please, Nancy Pelosi, try to overcome gridlock or retire so new energy can govern our country in collaborative ways. I mean, this is harsh, but at the same time, you know, this is what you're hearing about this polarization and gridlock. He mentioned Tom Friedman, and he's been writing about it quite consistently lately, that the government's not moving. So a third party.
Well, let me say that I'm a big believer in the democratic process. Any party can come forth, and if they can make their mark, good for them. But the fact is, it's very hard to do. I would rather see public financing of campaigns. I think that would go a long way to restore public confidence in what happens in the public sector.
We tried it with McCain-Feingold, didn't we?
That wasn't public finance. That was limitations on funding. But the Supreme Court practically overturned all of that. That was, I thought, very undemocratic decision. But the fact is that the Republicans have been successful in this vein. They have thrown confusion. And if you don't understand the issues, you think, well, why don't they just figure it out? Why don't they just figure it out? If they would go out there and say, we are here to destroy the public space, and we would say, this is the amount of public space we think is necessary, we could have a legitimate debate on that. But they don't say that. They undermine, you know, cause confusion.
We have seconds left. I just have to ask you about something, since I have you here in studio, about the Central Subway Project. It's emerged as a hot-button issue in the mayor's race, and some candidates, including City Attorney Herrera, have come out against the project because of costs and other concerns. And there have been reports, I ought to add, that the federal funding is in doubt. What's the future of this project? Can you respond to the criticism? We just have seconds left.
Well, this was a project that came through the community process. It was something that was agreed to. This is the way they wanted to go. It didn't mean there was unanimity. There's always controversy about initiatives of this size and this impact on the community. But this is way down the road. And this is not now, okay, let's change your mind and figure out something else to do. This has met the criteria. The decision makers in Washington, D.C. have stand by the rating that they have given this, and I think we should go forward with it.
On that note, we've come to the end.
Oh, well, too bad so soon.
But
in any event, I say to all of the people who are impatient, be impatient. You're right.
David Talbot will join us in the next half hour. This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny.